602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed out up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for the next 2 hours. But I'll make it worth your while because we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk about car stuff, and I've got two special guests with me today. But before we get to them, I want to talk about Quality Transmission, which is a transmission shop in the East Valley who makes everybody happy. There isn't a week that goes by. A day sometimes. Every day I get a call from a happy customer. They tell me how knowledgeable Bob was and his staff, how much money they saved, how happy they are, and how in a comfort zone. They all mentioned something, a derivative of, I'm really comforted by what they did. So they go out of their way to make sure you understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, and it's always going to be based on your symptoms. Quality Transmission is located on McClintock north of University in Tempe. Okay, Carol Bell. Carol Bell is a buddy of mine since the 70s.
Yeah, 75.
75, okay.
Yes.
And we have been, we've paralleled pretty much. Yes. That we both had gas stations and we both are in the independent repair. But who's this guy over here?
That's my son, Craig.
Craig?
Craig now owns the business. I'm just a gopher.
What's your job there?
I drive people home, pick up parts, road test a few cars.
Do they know that they have the boss running them around?
Sometimes.
And sometimes they don't?
No.
Now, do you ever hear anything like, who's that pretty girl up there in the front counter?
Occasionally.
Yeah, and do you say that's my daughter-in-law, or do you just let it slide?
I usually tell them it's Craig's wife.
Well, we're going to start back in the olden days, and you first got into the auto repair business about what year?
1964.
Okay. And then your first gas station, was that here in Arizona?
Yes.
And you're a Midwesterner.
That's correct.
Where were you from?
Born in Iowa, raised in Minnesota.
Okay. You got to say that better, though.
Why is that? Minnesota?
There you go. You got to do it right if you're going to do it at all. All right. So you come to Arizona, and which gas station did you buy first, or which one did you end up in first?
Shell station on the corner of Granite Reef and McDowell.
Which is right across the street from that Motorola plant.
That's correct.
So you had that, and it was branded Shell.
That's correct.
Now, what year was that, 75?
1975, yes.
Okay. During that period of time, there was a bill going through Congress, or attempting to go through Congress, being fought by the major oil companies. Do you remember what they called that bill?
I can't really remember the name. What it was the fact that we all had the first right of refusal if you were in a station that was company owned.
Okay. But they also had a divorcement bill, and the divorcement bill serves the people of the United States better if the major oil companies can never retail the sale of gas.
That's correct.
So the divorcement bill said that the oil companies can drill for it, they can process it, they can sell it to a wholesaler, or what we called a jobber, right?
And then to the retailer, which was myself.
Which was you guys.
Right.
All right. Now, during that period of time, we lost that battle. Needless to say, we lost that battle, because today, folks, virtually every gas station you go to is owned and operated by whoever's got their name out there, whether it's Shell. Can you name any gas station owners right now that actually are in the retail sale of gas and have kind of a franchise agreement?
Bill Bridwell still has a Texaco. Well, actually, I take that back again. That's now, can't remember.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Yeah. I'm with you. I can't remember. But he's buying from the spot market. He's buying from the spot market, and he'll buy from Chevron or Exxon or Mobil or Shell, any of those guys.
Yeah, right. That is correct. He's not really a branded station any longer.
Right. There is no branded.
He is still a full-service station.
Right.
The only one in Arizona.
Yep, he's the only one that will wash your windows and check your oil.
That's correct.
Now, he's at Scottsdale and Lincoln, right?
Yes.
Okay. But is there any other guys out there that actually are what we called a franchisee. Do you know anybody who had the same agreement, a jobber agreement, a franchise agreement with the major oil companies?
I don't know of any right now, okay. No.
All right, so here's my question. Craig, what was the best penny per gallon profit that you ever remember? And you too, Carol. What was the best average weighted margin?
I think he said, 15, 16 cents, something like that?
16 cents. That was the government would allow us to have that one, and that was the tail end of the second energy crunch.
Okay. So the government said you guys can only have 16 cents per gallon.
That's correct.
16 cents above what you pay for.
That's right.
But that's a weighted average, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you were never going to make a heck of a lot of money selling super at 16 cents a gallon, so you had to sell unleaded at 5 cents a gallon, and you had to make it up somewhere else, right?
Yes, yes.
So it's called a weighted average between regular, unleaded, and super.
Right.
And you did 16 cents, which is the government.
Right.
What did Exxon report just recently?
What, 20?
20. 20. Now, keep in mind that they're not only bringing it out of the ground, but then they're selling it to themselves and selling it to themselves and selling it to themselves, and the jobber, which is you, made 20 cents.
Yep. That's correct.
We should have passed that divorcement bill when we had the chance.
We tried.
We did. We sure gave it a. And then I remember what you said. You were talking about you guys had the first right of refusal. When they canceled your contract, you had the first right of refusal to buy the ground and the station.
That's right.
That did pass.
Yes, that was in effect at the back end of the 70s.
Yeah.
But mine was a rental unit, so I did not have that right. Because someone else owned it other than Shell.
Okay. So that was only if Shell owned the ground and owned the tanks and owned the pumps.
That's right.
But if Joe Smith from Minneapolis owned the ground, the tanks, and the pumps, then he wasn't obligated.
He had that right first right of refusal if he wanted to option. Like Whitey had that right on his Shell station at the time.
Yeah, that was at Miller and Indian School?
No, he was at Granite Reef and McDonald, Shell station up there.
Okay, I know where that's at. But then he moved. He's had Shell stations all over Scottsdale.
That's correct.
He's had McDonald and Granite Reef.
Yep, and Miller and Indian School.
And Second Street in Scottsdale?
Second Street and Scottsdale Road.
Okay. And that was on the west side of the road, but then he had one up where there's the new, it's no longer a gas station, but he had another location up there, north of that mobile station, a block or two.
Yeah, that was on Main Street.
Uh-huh.
And just east of Scottsdale Road.
On the north side of the road, right?
It was a Texaco station.
Caller Bob.
Yep. So you've been around a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. But
so,
I want...
So is Craig.
Okay.
He started 1 week after I started.
All right. So here's my question to both of you. I think... Well, here, let me make a statement, then I'm going to ask you if you think the same way. I think this was a good thing. Because when we worked for those major oil companies, they had us doing some of the stupidest things in the whole wide world that really never made any sense. And they were picky, and the kids that were our reps?
Yes.
The kids that were our rep typically had just come out of college, and they had about as much sense as an eraser on a pencil. And they were telling us how to run a business that might pump 3 million gallons a year.
Yeah, right.
And they wanted us to do 10 million gallons a year. Now, if you divide 30 days into 10 million, it's going to be a little tough if I only have 8 nozzles and 2 islands. You know what I mean?
Against a station on all four corners.
Right.
Competition.
Yeah. And then drop your price. Well, then I won't make but 2 cents a gallon. So what? Well, it's kind of hard to pay everybody if I only make 2 cents a gallon. I think we're better off. I think we were scared, right, Craig?
Oh, yeah.
We were scared when we left the gas station business because that was a constant loop of customers coming across our ding-ding bells.
Yep. There was always cash flow.
And you had cash flow. But now, as we're in the independent repair business all by ourselves, and we're our own bosses, we've made it or we haven't. And it's all dependent on us. So if you failed, it's your fault. And if you made it, it's your fault.
All right.
So you're at 8700 McDowell now. So you're only a block east of the old gas station you used to be at.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And they are on my list. They're on my list. Bell Auto Service, 8700. So which is one block west of Pima Road. And it's about two blocks west of the 101.
101, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the north side of the road.
Right.
And wasn't there an alignment shop around you close by?
Bob Jordan's right next door.
Next door. Is he still around?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yep.
He's an ornery old guy, but he sure knows how to do alignments.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, if you wave the flag in front of him and you say, Bob, got this doggone motorhome here. Nobody can get this straightened. It's been all over the United States, and he's had 14 alignments done, and nobody can fix the pole. You got him. Hook, line, and sinker, Bob raises his hand and says, I'm your man.
And he'll fix it.
And he'll fix it. And he'll. And I say, what specs did you use? I fixed it.
Well, his son's working for him. They're both working almost the same as we are. His son's doing a lot of hot rod, specialty hot rod stuff.
He was a fabricating kid, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He could build anything.
He'll do some wild front ends on some of those cars.
Oh, yeah. He was just one of those kids that had no fear. He'd build anything. I mean, if you wanted him to put a diesel motor in the back of a Volkswagen, he could pull that off. He could pull that off. Yeah. He was a good kid. He is a good kid, and so is Bob. All righty, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to take calls. So, I've already got one caller, and who's that, Josh?
That was Bob.
Bob, you stay right there because you're first. And anybody else, here's a number, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You've got 100 years of experience sitting in this room right now. And these two guys are a lot smarter than I ever was and ever am. So between the three of us, we ought to be able to fix your car. So if you'll give us a call, any car question isn't out of bounds. And Carol, you don't have to tell us really what you say to those people in the van when they comment about the pretty girl at the front counter. You don't have to tell us that. But I can remember my brother, as when he was driving with us.
1 minute.
That was one of those common things. And he says, what do you want me to say? And I said, I don't care. He says, well, I don't want to tell him it's my niece because they're going to feel bad. Who cares? Who cares? 602-508-0960. Craig and Carol Bell from Bell Automotive, 87th Street in McDowell in Scottsdale, is sitting here with me. And when we come back, we're also going to talk some of the differences with respect to what was different back then to now. Because what was your cheapest labor rate, Carol?
$12 when we started.
When you started. And today, of course, we're up to $90 to $114, $115, depending on who you are and what traffic you've got. So we're going to talk about that. But the days of $12 labor are probably gone, so we probably won't have that in any time unless they devalue and move that decimal point to the left a couple of points, and then we might be there. So 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. This is 960 The Patriot.
Michael Brazil to the dream of Henry Ford.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and just like we said, we're going to go to Jerry. But before that, I got a little bit of business to take care of. Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom at Action Auto is a full-service shop. Deer Valley, 1983 is when he started. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto, they use factory-recommended intervals, which means they don't make up service intervals so that they benefit from your dollars. They use factory recommended intervals for the maintenance services that they ask you if you want performed. Their technicians are ASC Master certified. They get the job done right. They are an A-plus rated at the Better Business Bureau. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then please give Action Auto a try if you don't already have a good garage that you love. Jerry, you're up, buddy. How can I help you?
I have a 2010 F-150 with an automatic transmission, and I'm getting an intermittent problem. It feels like a U-joint, but it's not. I'll take off, and I'll get a clunk. I'll stop, and I'll get a clunk, but it goes away. Sometimes I'm stopped at a stop sign, just idling, and you'll feel it a little bit, not real hard. And then it goes away for a week.
Okay. Well, a U-joint's not going to go away.
No.
How many miles are on it?
56,000.
What kind of... So you said it happens when you're idling. Is that you're feeling a vibration or a noise? Or?
No, you just feel it like a surge, a clunk. Just like a U-joint if it was clicking over.
And okay, but I mean... When you come to a stop, does the clunk occur before you come to the stop or when you come to the stop?
When you come to the stop.
Okay. And now when you take off, does the clunk occur immediately or 20 feet into the acceleration?
Immediately.
Okay.
It's got to be a suspension shift.
Yeah.
That's, do this.
Those stabilizer links on always. Fords, you know, those always make a noise.
Well, my answer at first place was going to say it's a Ford, but I didn't want to say that. Carol, what kind of car do you drive?
I have a, my wife has a Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, and I have a CRV.
Okay. All right. Craig, how about you?
Nissan Titan.
And?
Well, you want me to go down the list?
No.
I have a 62 Corvair.
Do you really? Is it red?
No, it's blue. My wife would love it. It was red.
I want a 63 Corvette. It's my first car.
Okay.
With the twin carbs and the 4-speed.
Well, there you go.
Red, black interior. Ooh, yeah. I'd love it. All right. Getting back to Jerry. Jerry, this is what you got to do. I want you to come up to a light really soft, and I bet you don't have the noise. Then I want you to take off very soft, and I bet you don't have the noise. And then you're going to go behind bashes, and you're going to be stopped. And when there's a light, changes. I want you to I want you to accelerate normally, and then I want you to brake. And I bet they'll come back depending on how hard or how soft you are on your stop and on your takeoff, which means some portion of the front end is shifting. So when you accelerate, the front end comes backwards. And when you brake, the front end goes forward. But if I'm going to have you accelerate and I'm going to shift it backwards, but I'm going to ask you to brake real softly, which doesn't allow it to shift forward. Now, how hard is this? What's the diagnostic time on something like this?
Oh, probably half hour.
Maybe. And let's talk dollars. It's $40 to $50
more,
maybe.
Yeah, $40 to $50.
And really and truly, let me ask you, if you and I were working on this car, which one of us would be driving and which one of us would be laying underneath the front of it?
2 minutes.
Okay, I'll be underneath the front.
Okay.
All right, what are you going to be doing?
Going to be doing all kinds of things.
No,
braking.
We're not. I'm underneath the truck.
Okay.
What are you going to do?
Slow forward brake and hit it pretty hard.
Okay.
Same thing, back up a little bit, hit it pretty hard.
Shift the suspension.
Shifting, moving stuff.
And I'm going to be laying on the ground watching the suspension. And as you go forward and brake hard, and then as you back up and brake hard, am I going to see this?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, but you got two highly paid guys here.
Yeah.
I'm $100 an hour. You got to be $100 an hour. So why isn't that $200? That other guy's charging $200. Oh, Jerry, the answer is you got to shift of the suspension. What part of town do you live in?
North Valley.
Okay. Do you have a garage that you already like?
I sure do. One of yours, Kurtz.
Oh, Kurtz. That no good son of a... Is that Kurtz, C-U-R-T-S?
Yeah, that's it.
He is a good guy.
They are the best.
Yeah.
1 minute.
When you go in there, you tell him, say, I am sure this is a U-joint, and just winking between you and me, and then you're going to take him out and show him it, and I'll bet you dollars to donut he turns around to you and says, no, it isn't. It's a suspension shift, and then you'll know you got a good guy.
Well, Jeff and I got an appointment.
Good for you. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you. All righty. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, we'll take your call. Anything. They haven't stumped us yet, have they, Craig?
No.
No, give us a try. Give us a try.
Caller's Dan and Bonnie.
Okay, Dan and Bonnie, you're going to stay there because we're going to get you on the other side of the break, I promise. And anybody else, again, at 602-508-0960, the only way they can stump us is to tell us a lie. Tell us about a car with a problem, okay? that doesn't exist. That's the only way they're going to get us. And we got Carol for that one.
Thank you.
If they go back into the 40s and 50s, Carol can handle it. All righty, we'll be back after this.
Problem that fellow had with the clunking.
Uh-huh.
Mine does not clunk when I come to a stop, but if you take off slowly, it doesn't happen. But if you accelerate normally, you'll feel a thunk.
Okay.
And the dealership told me that it was the slip joint on the drive line.
Okay.
It's sealed, and I said, well, how do you fix that? Well, we can take the rubber boot off of it and grease it by hand, and that takes care of it. It seems to be a problem from the factory that it's so tight that it'll bind and release,
yep.
Bind and release.
You're right.
And I've had it since this truck was new, so...
You're right.
Short of getting a new drive line, I don't think he'll be able to fix it otherwise.
No, it's... Craig... Is this a defect, or can we get past this?
Well, we can get past it. I mean,
it's a splined drive shaft, and it goes in and out.
Correct.
And I mean, Craig, if somebody really wanted to fix this, why wouldn't we just drill a hole in the side of that housing and put a Zerd in there?
That's what I was thinking.
What the heck? You're right, though. You're exactly right. That's something that we missed.
Yeah.
That's something that we missed about that slip joint. I thought he was going to go to the springs. You know how the springs will unwind on him? Clack, clap.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other day we had a guy come in, and he had a spring clap, and I put two big hose clamps on either end of the spring.
Okay.
And I know they were going to bust off, but I said, just go drive it. And he went out, and he was gone 15, 20 minutes. He comes back. He said, this is gone. I said, well, the only thing I did is put two hose clamps right here. So go down to Dunbar, leave in spring, and have him do another clamp on here, and you'll be fine. Right. But
okay,
but you're,
there's that one.
You're right.
And then the other one, you talked about we talked about a gas gauge sticking some time back. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Phillips said it wasn't working right.
Yep.
Well, I was using fast, I won't say the name of the store, but it was fast food gas.
Uh-huh.
And big company. But then I went on vacation with my trailer, and I started using Shell and Chevron exclusively because that's the most that were out there.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through the trip, my gas gauge started working. It's been working ever since. And I think the detergents from those the better gas cleaned off the contacts like you were talking about at that point.
Yep.
And took care of the problem.
Have you guys heard of that? Where the piano keys on the sending unit get dirty,
right.
And they say the top tier gas, which has 30% more detergent than anybody else, they say that that will help clean the piano keys. Now, the other side of the coin is a lot of guys are saying the Tecron and Chevron fixes the piano keys. But one way or another, people just like Dan are telling us that if the gas gauge becomes intermittent or goes away, just change the brand of gas for a little while and it'll clean up the piano keys and you're on your way. So, Dan, thank you very much. That's
you
very kind
great.
Of you.
Thanks.
You betcha. Thank you, Dan. All righty, Bonnie, you're up next. How can we help you?
We lost Bonnie. Robin's up.
Okay, Robin, you're up next. Robin, how can I help you?
I have a 2005 Nissan Altima, and I brought it in AutoZone, did the diagnostic test, and it's misfiring on number 3. What do you recommend?
Oh, go ahead, Craig. I don't have anything nice to say, so you go first.
Oh.
I'm not mad at you, Robin.
No. Actually, Altima is fairly common, two different portions. You could either have a bad ignition coil, which are real common, or a bad fuel injector, which is real common.
Or a bad spark plug.
Bad spark plug.
And if it's not coil over, where the coil doesn't sit on, and then you got a bad wire.
Wire, yeah, correct.
And a vacuum leak.
The 2001, yeah.
Where do you recommend to bring it to?
What part of town do you live in, Robin?
Chandler.
I'm looking at the map real quick. What part of Chandler? East, west, north, south?
Over like Ahwatukee, Chandler area.
Oh.
There's some guy here, sitting here, right here.
You're embarrassing me now.
Mark's at Ahwatukee.
I don't have anybody in the Ahwatukee west area, and I'll tell you why. It's because my list is my list, and I didn't feel like I should be on my list. So for 20 years, I haven't been on my list, but I'm at Warner and I-10, and I'm quite sure we could help you.
Warner and I-10?
Yep, just 1 mile east on the south side of the road. The address is 1025.
You got to look at him. He's really, really trying not to give his name out. So.
What's the name of your shop?
It's Salem Boys Auto. Now I'm ask you, I want to talk. You bring up a good subject, and I want you to know I'm not mad at you, okay?
Uh-huh.
But I let's think about this out loud together, okay? The guys at AutoZone are likely to make how much?
$9 an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say they're $10 to $12 an hour.
Right.
Okay. Now, 40 times 12 is 500 a week. Times 52 weeks is $25,000 a year. Is my math okay?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Your most expensive tech makes how much a year?
70, 80.
Okay.
Depends on the year, but
okay. All right. Good. 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 And now I want you to average your techs. From the bottom, the $22 junior guy, all the way up to the top tier guy. The average tech at your shop makes about?
40, 50, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I've got a couple of 75 and 80s. I got a couple of 25s and 30s, but the average is going to be 40 to 50. Here's the problem, Robin. When you go in, they're reading your codes, but this is what the code says. The code says, I see a problem in number 3 cylinder. But it doesn't say that you need an injector, a spark plug wire, a spark plug, or a coil, or you have a vacuum leak at the EGR that sits on top of number 3 runner.
Right, yeah.
So it doesn't tell you that's what it takes. Now, for him to go out into the parking lot, I am of the opinion that his job is to sell parts.
Mm-hmm.
And people do. They'll say, well, he'll say, well, let's try an EGR valve. And then you'll say, okay, so you put it on, and then you go back, and he checks it. Oh, it's still there. Let's try this. Let's try that. By the time you get done, there's a better than 50-50 chance you'll have it fixed, but you've paid three times what we'd charge you.
Yeah.
And the idea is we're capable of focusing in. If this would you go to a place that was teaching medical students and have them do brain surgery on you? I mean, not that there's a real there's no relationship there because we're not doing brain surgery. But if this kid was really good, he wouldn't be working there. He'd be working for me. And the idea is this is a promotion to sell parts. And here's the unusual part. I put an air filter in a car on an oil change. And if you're not happy, I'm going to give it to you for free. Even though the old one's in a box and I can show you the difference between the new one and the old one, I'm not going to fight with you. I'm going to give you that. People will go in there and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on parts and never once say to him, hey, you keep suggesting parts, and we haven't even come close to this. But in reality, he sold you a lot of parts, which is really what his job is because he works in a parts department. You brought up the subject, and I'm not being mean to you or mad at you. Just be cognizant of, you know, the guy on the street corner. You wouldn't ask him for law advice and so forth like that. This is a $75 to $110 diagnosis.
Right. Correct.
And it's going to be one part and one labor, or it could be a vacuum leak where you just fix the vacuum leak and there is no parts. It could be something very simple. But what you do is you go, every shop you go to, Robin, you go in and you say, here's my symptom. I have a check engine light. I understand this is the code that was found earlier, because we may find a different code, and that could cause problems. And then would you call me with an estimate once you determine it, how much is your diagnostic fee? And everybody's going to tell you the same thing. Pretty close, 75. Well, you're going to go up to 150 if I can include everybody in the industry. 75 to 150. At my place, you're going to be 75 to 125, period. And it'll probably be on the lower side than the upper side because that's not going to be a tough one. So, Robin, thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling in. Walter, is it Walter? Did I get that right?
Yep.
All right, Walter.
Thanks, fellas.
You go right ahead.
Okay. I have a 1993 Mercedes 500 SL.
Oh, Carol, this one's for you. Go ahead.
It's only got 47,000 miles on it. It's been the baby of the family for a while, as you can imagine. I got a couple, I guess, minor problems. The power window on the driver's side has decided not to seat in the gasket when it comes up and hits on the outside of it. And I can't figure out what the heck's wrong with it.
Okay. I can tell you real quick, and so can you guys. The regulator is bringing the window up at the wrong angle because one of the rollers on the regulator's worn out. Mm-hmm. One of them's broken. But you're going to have to take the door panel off, and once you get in there, and if you can't find it, then open up the other door and look at it, and you'll be able to look at the two regulators, and you'll see quickly what's wrong. And maybe even one of the mounting bolts is gone, which is cocking the regulator.
Yeah.
All right, go with your second one because we got to be quick.
My issue is I'm not much good at fixing stuff. Who would you recommend me take it to?
Oh, okay. What part of town you live in?
I live over in Arrowhead Ranch in Glendale.
I got a couple of guys up there that can handle this. Now, are we sure that this is an electric window and not a vacuum window?
No, I'm not sure. I think it's electric, but I'm not positive.
All right. Mike's Auto Tech, 67th Avenue in Northern.
Mike's Auto
Tech.
Tech.
And then Action Auto Repair, he's up at 21st Avenue in Deer Valley, which is just a little north of your Glendale area.
Okay.
But Action Auto or Mike's Auto Tech, and again, you go in and you say, let me show you this, and then come over here to the passenger side, let me show you this. What will you charge me to go in there and look at this? Because he's not going to know what's wrong.
Yeah.
But here's the best you can hope for. He's going to say $100 in and out because the door panel comes off and they're not easy, blah, blah. Look here. The bottom of the regulator's missing a nut on this stud right here. Oh, there's the nut inside the door. So he puts it on, he tightens it up, and you're done. That's the best you can hope for. Now, I'm willing to bet that that's a 50-50 chance.
Right.
We're missing a piece of hardware on that regulator, which keeps it from running in its track. So that's the good news. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Walter.
Second question, real quick. The convertible top on this thing is in fine shape, but the windows in the back are the old plastic jobs, and they've gotten fogged up. Is there someone you could recommend that could repair, put new windows in without giving me a whole new top?
Craig, you got anybody?
I would. The only one I have, I would send him to First Class.
Yeah.
But auto body.
Yeah.
He's good, real good.
Yeah, First Class is in the middle of Scottsdale. The guy I would have you call and talk with about this is Ron over at Top Notch Upholstery in Mesa.
Yeah.
I've sent a lot of convertible tops to him. Now, sometimes he says, Mark, I cannot put new windows in this because the material is so weathered that I can't sew it. And then when I stretch it over and close it, it's just going to rip. So I'm not going to put a new window in. It's a new top or nothing. There's been other times he said, I can put a window in this. So call Ron at Top Notch Upholstery in Mesa. He could probably talk to you. What's the name of that upholstery shop there on Scottsdale Road just north of Oak?
Oh, Verdone's?
No.
Oh.
It's
no.
Just south of Verdone's.
Okay.
It's south of the big church there.
Oh.
I had him do the love seat in the back of my big truck, the wraparound seat, and he did a great job.
Yeah.
But I don't know his name. If you want his name, you can call and talk to him. Then what I want you to do is email me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, and I'll give you his name and phone number as well. But First Class is a good shop.
One minute.
Carol, thank you very much for spending your Saturday here.
You're welcome.
And you're expected to be back in 6 months whether you like it or not.
If I can remember that far.
No, you're going to say yes, Mark.
Yes, Mark.
Okay. And Craig, you're responsible for dragging him
here. I can get him here. We can get
okay.
him here.
Now, if he doesn't, we'll just have to embarrass him. And what we'll do is we'll have a show about funny things my dad did when I was growing up.
I'll get a lot of those.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. And funny things my dad said to my mom as I was growing up. Okay? So it's either going to be you, Carol, or your wife.
Okay.
Which one you want to be on the radio?
You better ask.
Yeah. All righty. Well, these two Bell guys are from Bell Auto, 87th Street in Scottsdale, Pima Road and McDowell, just west on the north side of the street, and you can't do better than them. Bell Auto in Scottsdale. Good, honest guys, been around a long time. We'll see you next hour.
Car guy.
We have callers Paul and David.
Where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and I'm here for you. And I've got a couple of callers, Paul and David. I'm going to get to you in probably about less than 2 minutes. Anybody else? 602-508-0960, and we're going for the record today, so call us, and we're going to get your question in and out, and then we're going to move on. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's Auto Repair, which is in Mesa, has been around since 1970. I think they're the second or third generations to run this shop. They're equipped to handle anything, major, minor, foreign, domestic, motorhome, truck, SUV. Thompson's understands that your vehicle is a major investment, and they're going to care for your car as if it was their own. Brian and Thelma, a terrific married couple, they own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, on the south side of the road. Stapley and Main, east, south side of the road, maybe a block or so. Great people. So if you live in that area and you don't have a garage, you should try Thompson's. Okay, Paul, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
I've got a 2003 Chevy pickup. I had a check engine light came on, and it came out the code, the PO128, low coolant level or a thermostat.
Okay.
Oh, anyway, I haven't fixed it yet, but ever so often, and the engine is running a little cool. I did notice that on the temperature gauge. Thank goodness it does have a gauge. But ever so often when we're driving in the morning, I'll hear water gurgling in my heater, like I've got an air block that's cleared and it's letting water in.
Yeah.
And the heater works fine all the time, so I don't think I've got an air problem, but I don't know what that water gurgling is.
Okay. I'm not even going to concern myself with the gurgling of the water, because oftentimes on a Chevy truck, they put the stupid restrictor in the hose, and they don't even tell you about it. So the next guy that replaces the hose doesn't buy the hose with the restrictor on it, and that causes the problem. Besides, it's not part of the problem. The problem you probably have, and this is how I want you to test it, tomorrow morning, I want you to, whenever you get out of bed, I want you to go outside, pop the hood on the truck, take the radiator cap off, squeeze the upper hose, make sure that there's no pressure in the system. It should be soft and pliable, and look inside. You're going to have somebody in your family start the truck and bring the idle up to about 2,000 RPM. and it's going to be daylight, so you're going to be able to see inside the radiator. I want to know if the water is rippling or if it's actually moving. Because if it's moving, it shouldn't be moving, which means the thermostat's stuck wide open, which matches perfectly you saying it's running too cold. The computer wants that motor at 220, and if the thermostat is wide open, it won't get to 220. So the computer's thinking, this guy's in the Antarctica. Well, after a while, the ambient temperature sender says it's 95 degrees. And the computer goes, well, how can the ambient temperature be 95 degrees? And the doggone coolant is reporting 192 or 187, which is enough to get your heater working. So then it just throws a code and it says, hey, I got a problem. I'll bet your thermostat's stuck wide open. Now, here's another guaranteed test. You're going to want to make sure that you've got somebody with you that you want to play a joke on. You're in the morning. You're going to take the upper hose off the radiator, and you're going to have this person, and it's cold, it's first thing in the morning, and you're going to have him just watch for water coming out, and you start the car, tap the throttle kind of hard, and if the thermostat's stuck wide open, that flow will hit him. It's not going to be hot, and it's kind of funny. That's how we train new technicians.
My chief helper is my wife. I better be careful there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a bad thing. But really, yep. And truly, I think I've given you enough. If you find movement, not rippling, but movement of water, or if you take the upper hose off and just rev it once and you got water come out, then the thermostat's stuck wide open. That's all you need to do is fix it. I just saved you $75 worth of diagnostic time, and I'm 92% sure I'm right. Okay?
Great.
Okay?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And David, you're up next. David, how are you? What can I do for you?
Good morning. Two questions. I got a cam question and a transmission question.
Okay.
Two different vehicles. One's on a Chevy small block V8 with a factory 290 horsepower motor on it with a supercharger.
Okay.
The cam's flat, so I got to swap it out with something else. I haven't decided what to go with. I'm out of dilemma because I've put different cams in a specific motor.
I've got a couple of questions. Automatic or standard?
3-speed manual.
Okay, that means you can go a little more radical than an automatic.
Right.
And this is a supercharged small block Chevy. What does it have? Any PC, any ECM, or is it just a carbureted motor?
It's carbureted, 64.
Okay. The problem you're going to have is that with an automatic transmission and a big cam, you're not going to get a good quality idle in drive. But in a 4-speed or 3-speed, you can. So they have an RV cam that they used to call an RV cam, which was a step up from the stock cam. Then they have levels above that. I'd probably go to an RV and no more than the next step up. Just a mild cam or a slightly more mild cam would be all I'd do, because the blower at 4 or 5 pounds of boost is going to make it run like you want it anyway. So it all has everything to do with idle. It has everything to do with idle. If you put too big of a cam in there, you're never going to get that thing to idle. It's not going to idle cold. It's not going to idle hot, and you're going to hate it.
Well, I've had the blower on there 5 years, and I was running a 268H Extreme Energy.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to CompCast, and they said that you're not getting the potential out of it, so I drop it down to a Magnum, like a 270 or something.
Okay.
But with a load separation like 114.
The only way those numbers mean anything to anybody is in a comparison point of view.
Right.
So the cam when they said you're not going to get the maximum performance, that's not what you want. You want that car to get you the best fuel economy you can and have as most power, and you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of power for dependability, a little bit of power for fuel economy and getting through emissions. That's what you're all about. This isn't a car that you feed your family on. You're not out drag racing this car. Maybe street racing, but not drag racing. So,
no.
Go ahead.
You're right. That's about what it is.
And another problem is if you start lifting those valves, 3.0, then all of a sudden you got different pistons and that you're going to have to put in. Otherwise, the valves are going to collide. You're putting lots of load on the cam. Now we have 2 or 3 springs on the valves to close them because you're stroking them so big and the duration's so long. So when you do that, you get into a situation that one problem causes the next, and I suggest you just go with a slightly mild cam.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay?
Okay, second question.
Okay.
An 89 Jeep Wagoneer,
okay.
Grand Wagoneer. The transmission... smoke that transmission I'm looking for a carry-in, carry-out deal.
Okay. I want you to email me at mark@marksalem.com because I don't have any information in front of me. But there is a place, there's two places I'm going to give you, and what you're going to do is have the transmission in front of you. Have you got it out yet?
No.
Okay.
Well, the problem is I bought the Jeep Wagoneer for the purpose of my Jeep pickup.
Okay.
The Jeep pickup has an inline six-cylinder in it.
Okay.
And I was going to swap the motor and transmission and the steering column and the other parts into the truck because I want the truck to have the eight-cylinder.
Okay.
But the problem with the Grand Wagoneer was it was perfect. Nothing missing, nothing gone, nothing touched. So it's like, I can't do that. Because it was just intact completely. So it's like,
right.
Dang it.
Right. So you just want to go ahead and fix up the Grand Cherokee now.
The Wagoneer.
Wagoneer. Yeah, well, that there's nothing wrong with that. The only way you can do that transition where you can take, you know, a four-cylinder with a one barrel and stick in a V8 with a four barrel is to have two cars side by side because the brackets, the wiring, the hoses, the bolts, the nuts, everything has to be changed. So
yeah, that's why we bought this Wagoneer.
Okay. So when you get the transmission out, he's going to want to know the numbers on the side of it, on the back of it, and he's want to know the information on the plate. So if you're sure that the transmission is bad, pull it and the converter together, set them on the ground, and get your phone out, and I'll give you two phone numbers to call, and you say, this is what I got. How much? Do you have a recondition on the shelf? And he's going to say, I'm going to have to swap your speed, your driven gear, because your drive gear is this, and I'll put this driven gear in, or I'll use your old driven gear, but that's the only thing. I've got that transmission in stock, and that's it.
It's a 727.
Yeah, the idea is they're going to want you to flush the cooler or replace the cooler, and if the cooler's in your radiator, you can only replace it by replacing the radiator because if you put that in and you tell us you flushed the cooler, but then you bring it back under warranty and it's all full of metal, and we take the cooler out of the radiator and cut it open and it's all full of metal, your warranty's history.
Right.
So what you've got to do is you've got to figure out how you're going to take high compressed air and you're going to run solvent or some kind of a heavy caustic chemical through that cooler, or better yet, spend another $100 and put an external cooler on it.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about it.
With an external?
Yeah, there's no problem. Just give a good airflow. That's all that it has to happen. And it's not a good idea to pile it on top of the condenser because then you got the external cooler, then you got the condenser, then you got the radiator, and you're superheating all the air that goes across the radiator.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, David. Thank you very much. All righty. Do we have any other callers?
We have Tara.
Tara, how are you today? What can we do for you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I have a 2002 Ford F-150.
Okay.
And the check engine light is on, and it's having some issues, and it's in time for the emissions to be, you know, done for the registration. And so I go to the AutoZone. I don't think you're a fan
of okay.
that.
It's okay. It's okay.
And they say that when they connect it to the machine, the machine they have, it says connection error. And they can't give me a code. It won't give a code at all.
Okay.
Do you think that that's just some kind of wiring issue in that with the data link connect?
See, that's what it pleases me that. So they run into a computer that they can't talk to, and all of a sudden it's wiring or it's a new computer or something like that. When it
right.
can be all kinds of small stuff. It could be a fuse. It could be a fuse, and half of them are a fuse.
That's funny you say that, because the fuse, before, it would blow. And so when I got there, I put a new one in, because I knew it was going to blow.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't drive it after that. You know, when I got to the place, and they were going to put it on the machine, okay. I put the new fuse in. So maybe that's it.
Well, here's the deal. The fuse is going to do one more than one thing. Take your owner's manual, open it up, and in the back of it, it's going to have a picture of the fuse box.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say, oh, that's fuse 18. Turn the page, and it's going to say fuse 18 runs.
1 minute.
The torque converter clutch. It runs all kinds of things. It'll have three or four things. Any one of those can cause that fuse to blow. What a good tech's going to do is he's going to disable each one of those systems one by one until he figures it out. Now, they may say to you, you know why you got a courtesy light circuit on this, and that fuse services the PCM and wakes it up when you turn the key on. So I'm going to disable your courtesy lights right at the switch, and I want you to drive it for a couple of days. And you come back, and he goes, oh, fuse is still there. So he plugs in the courtesy lights. You leave. You come back in 20 minutes and say, bingo, it blew. He says, fine, that's the area I got to go. That's what you're going to pay for. So this is really, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 or a 4 in my world. So where do you live? What part of town you live in?
I live on the west side, like 43rd Avenue and Thomas.
road.
Okay, do you have a garage that you like and you trust?
No, I don't, actually.
Okay, well, Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School is the place that I would send you. There's no question in my mind he can fix your car. Now, there's three parts of a repair. You're going to say to them, I've got a blown fuse, and there is no data exchange with the computer. I don't expect you to remember the assembly line data link, ALDL, but you just point to that thing underneath the dash and say, that thing ain't talking, and this fuse is blown, and he'll know what to do. And you say, what's the diagnostic? And you can't say, how much is it going to cost to repair, because he doesn't know that yet. But you say, call me with the estimate. Tell me what the diagnosis fee is, and then tell me how much more you want for the part and the labor. And then he'll do that. That's how it works.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck to you, Tara. 602-508-0960. If you want to join me, you can. All you got to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. This is Under the Hood here on the Patriot KKNT. We'll be right back right after this.
The president makes his first visit to Israel since becoming president.
In the realm of the spirit, we will always be neighbors.
No worries, we got Don Wade.
Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about car repair and your cars and your car problems and industry standards and what's going on in the industry. But this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. You heard his name last hour from a happy customer. You'd be hard-pressed to find the level of expertise that their auto repair technicians actually have. Kurt has years of experience working on all kinds of cars, gas, diesels, everything. Their goal is to offer the best services at the best prices, get you back on the road quickly. Kurtz Auto is located at I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. So if you live in that area and you want a good repair shop, then I suggest you try Kurtz Auto Repair. Back to the phones. Don, you waited, and you're first. How can I help you today?
Yeah, I drove down from Minnesota here. I've got a 2011 Impala, and I noticed when I got in the, coming down into Payson there, anything over 45 miles an hour, noticed this kind of a pulsation of that in the front end of the car. Is that their rotors getting out of warp or warped or something?
Let me tell you, it's possible. If you were coming off the mountain there at Payson and you were going down to Rye, that's a long, and if you let the car freely go, you'll be doing well over 100 at the end of the road. If you overheated the brakes, then this is how you're going to see it. Around town, you won't feel much. When you get on the freeway and you're taking an exit, and as you get off on the freeway onto the exit ramp, you're probably doing anywhere from 60, 65 miles an hour, and you're going to come to a stop in a rather quick period of time. If it shakes at that point, then those are warped rotors. And that's pretty easy to take care of. But here, more important than anything else, is may I suggest that you have the rear brakes cleaned and adjusted, and here's why. If the rear brakes don't ever get adjusted, and there's an automatic mechanism that half the time works and half the time doesn't, then all of the brake responsibility goes to the fronts, and it overheats the fronts because the backs aren't helping. So may I suggest that when you go in and they say they want to machine the front rotors, that you say, fine, but I want you to clean and adjust the rear brakes. Now, here's how you'll know they did it. The pedal will be higher when you're done because the back brakes set the pedal height. And if they adjust the back brakes, the pedal will be a little higher and you'll feel the difference. All of that together might be $80 to $100. All righty?
Okay, they're not self-adjusting or anything on the rear then?
Well, do you know if you have drum or disc on the rear?
Your disc.
Okay, then they could be self-adjusting, or it could be, do you ever use your parking brake?
Very seldom.
Okay, most of the time, when you use your parking brake, it takes up the slack with a ratcheting device on the piston. So when you push the parking brake, it pushes it out, and then it gets to a point where there's no friction, and it pushes it and pushes it until it hits friction, and then it locks, kind of like a ratchet. Okay. So you might try this. You might go out there and just put the car up against a parking block, put it in drive, and just pump that pedal. Keep your foot off the other brake, but pump that pedal, that parking brake pedal, 20 times, and then go drive it. And if it makes a big difference, then Salem hit a home run. Okay. All righty.
I have a quick question. I have also a 91 Oldsmobile van, and the courtesy light, does that just pull out of the headliner, the whole unit, so I can change the bulbs, but the bulbs are out?
Well, yeah, but you shouldn't have to pull the whole assembly. You should be able to take a small screwdriver and just take the lens off the assembly.
Oh, okay.
Be real careful, but yeah. It's either going to snap at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock, or it's going to snap at 9 o'clock at 3 o'clock. So one of those four corners. But if you just take your little screwdriver in there and you kind of bend it back and you look with a flashlight, you'll be able to see, oh, there's a tooth there. I'm just going to push that in and pop this side out, and you're done.
Oh, okay, great.
All right, good enough. Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. Eric, you're up next. What can I do for you?
Yeah, Mark, thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a 2007 GMC Yukon, and the dash lights have quit working, where they're like the mileage and all the computerized, you know, the information.
Uh-huh.
I fixed it twice temporarily with banging on the dashboard real hard, but that doesn't work any longer.
Yeah. I wish you would have called me before it didn't work any longer. This is how it works. We're going to send power up to the dimmer switch. Well, actually, it's going to go through the headlight switch first. And then when you turn on your headlights, then it's going to go past the headlight switch into the dimmer switch, and from the dimmer switch to the dash. That's how they're typically wired. So the question is when you were beating on the dash, I would have had you beat on the headlight switch, and then I would have had you roll the resistor for brightness on your dash lights. I would have had you localize your hitting around those guys to see if we could change it. It's not going to be hard, because you're going to work backwards on the circuit. So you're going to start at the dashboard and work backwards. Or you're going to go ahead and pull that wheel out of your dashboard and check to see if you have 12 volts coming in, and then we can regulate the voltage out. It could be anywhere. It could be the printed circuit board on the back of the dashboard. It could be the resistor that raises or lowers the lighting on your dashboard. It could be the headlight switch. It could be a lot of things.
Well, it's an all on or all off. It's not. It's the computer readout where it shows me my mileage, my trips, my oil change, all that type of stuff. And it's an all or nothing thing. So it's not like the dimmer switch being brighter or less.
Okay.
It's
2 minutes.
It's the whole. All or nothing.
I know what you're talking about now. And I was I made a mistake, because I assumed you were going left, and really you went right, and I wasn't listening to you good. So that's
okay.
It's my fault. Yes, here's what I want you to do on that problem. First of all, are you the original owner of the truck?
Yes.
Bingo. Is the dealership still around that you bought it from?
Yes.
And have you been back since you bought the truck?
Several times.
Good. Then you go in there. Not on a Monday morning or a Friday night, and you talk to a service writer and you say, this is what I've got, and I did a little research on the internet, and this seems to be a dashboard problem. I know I'm probably out of warranty, but I was just wondering, because I'm the original owner and because I'm one of your customers, how much does it cost to fix this, which is basically installing a new dash, an instrument panel, not the dash, an instrument panel. How much does it cost to fix it, and is there any financial assistance that you guys or Chevrolet or GMC can offer me? That's a really nice way. And you've hit him in the face right off the bat by telling him you bought it from them and you're the original owner. Otherwise, I'm scared to guess, because it can be anywhere from $200 all the way up to $500 or $600. It just depends on what's all wrong. There is a place in town here that you can take the dashboard out and take it to them and they'll fix it.
Okay.
But you're going to have to email me that for that, because I don't have that information in front of me. But let's try the dealership and see if there's any financial assistance there. Well, if they won't split the bill in half with you, I'd take that deal.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck to you, Eric. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Jim and Tom, your guys are next. I'm going to take a break here at the 30 mark, which is in 14 seconds. But Jim and Tom, you're our next two callers. Anybody else? 602-508-0960, 508-0960. Or 888-960-9696. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're going to go till noon today, and I'm going straight to the callers this time. Jim, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
Well, I've got a 2003 Nissan Altima.
Okay.
And it has a Curiosity.
Okay.
During the cold weather, during the wintertime, when I first start driving it, it makes a whining sound, like maybe there's a bearing that's grinding a little bit or something.
Okay.
And after I've driven it a little bit, it goes away. Okay. When it's warmer, like it is now, it doesn't happen. I've had two different shocks tear it apart. It seems to come from the passenger side of the car. And they've checked bearings and brakes and everything else. Nobody can find anything.
Okay,
any
well...
Any guesses?
Well, if I was standing in front of you, I would say... There's no way I'm going to charge you for an inspection that involves brakes and wheel bearings because of this reason. The first question that has to be answered by you is this whine related to the RPMs of the engine, or is it related to the speed of the vehicle?
I'm sorry, I didn't tell you that. It is speed related down to about, once you get above about 15 or 20 miles an hour, you'll hear it.
Okay. Number two, if you're on a straight road on a Sunday morning where there's nobody around you, if you start swerving back and forth on a two-lane road, taking up all of it, does it change the noise then?
Well, that I don't know. I haven't done that.
Here's why. Because if you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden you go to the right, and it goes, and you go to the left, and the noise goes away. When we go right, okay, we're loading the inside bearing on the right front.
Okay.
And when we turn left, we're actually it's the other way around. When we turn right, we're loading the driver's side bearing. And when we turn left, we're loading the right side bearing. It's which bearing is taking the load of the car. So when we're turning hard right, then we're really leaning on that left front tire hard. So I would take a ride with you, and then I want to know this. Does brake activity have anything to do with this noise? Can you change the noise by 2 foot driving this thing, and can you change it and make it come or go based on brakes?
Well, I've tried that, and it doesn't do a thing.
Okay. All right. So what you've got is you've got a noise related to the speed of the vehicle. Now, if you get going at 40 miles an hour, and if you were to stick it in neutral and shut the key off, it's not going to lock the steering wheel because it's not in park. Is the noise still there?
I haven't tried that either.
That's what I want you to do. That's exactly
okay.
I want you to. And I'm telling you what, you'll save yourself $100 in diagnosis if you pull into a shop and you say, would you assign a technician to me for just 10 minutes and I'm going to show him my problem. I'm going to show him how to make it and how it goes away. Because if you start swerving left and right and that noise comes and goes, then it is a bearing. But they're not going to find it unless they're behind the seat and we're loading the bearing. They're not going to find it when the car's in the air and they're just spinning it around. It's not loaded. So it'll sound just fine on a stethoscope. So you got to go drive it. What part of town are you in?
Surprise.
Okay. Anybody out there you like?
Well, I've been using Johnson Automotive for several years.
Okay. All right. If you're happy with them and they've already treated you nice, I would be remiss in my advice. You stick with them. If they've treated you good and they know you and they take good care of you, but just work on trying to get it how it happens and how it comes and goes. Because if you can tell them how to make it come and go, then any good technician's going to know exactly.
2 minutes.
All righty.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Tom, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
We've got a 99 Lexus RX 300 with about 116,000 miles on it. And for the first time ever, the check engine light has come on.
Okay.
My question is it advisable to take it to a dealer, or what would you suggest? Excuse me. And should that be a charge?
Yes. Yeah, you're going to pay no matter where.
Okay.
It's my understanding, based on what the bills that I get to see, both independent side and dealership side, that the dealers... And I don't find fault with this. The dealers have kind of a set fee. So it may be everything's $125 or everything's $150. I think if you call around, you're likely to find somebody with a window like I suggested, $75 to $125. So if they've got a flat at $150 and there's somebody else that says $75 to $125, you might be better served with them. That's still, you can still pay the light bill that way.
So, any suggestions for the city area?
Gosh, I got a lot of good guys out there.
Well, I heard an ad for Thunderbird. That's
Thunderbird. I tell you what, Tom out there, he's an honest as the day is long. He's the kind of guy that if I had a daughter his age, I would want him to marry her. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. And
right.
I got Auto Dynamics out there, 99th Avenue and Grand. But between those two and S&S Tires, I got two S&S Tires out there. And if they're good, they'll tell you. And if they're not, they say, you know what, this is beyond our capability, or we don't have a scanner for a Lexus. then you're going to go to Thunderbird Auto or Auto Dynamics. But those guys can do it. And I think if you make a call or two, you'll quickly find out the diagnostic fee and where you might be better served, because the repair is going to be within 10 or 20% of each other. So right. That's easy. All right. Thank you very much, Tom. Dan and Brian, you're going to be my next two callers. We're 4 minutes from the break, 3 minutes from the break. I'll see you in just a minute.
This is Michael Mitt.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate you spending Saturday mornings with me. The show is a whole lot better when you call in, 602-508-0960, and I appreciate the questions, and I think we have a lot of fun, and hopefully you learn something that's going to save you money, because that is my sole purpose. I want to tell you, that's what I like, is just giving you information that's going to save you some money. When you have a car with frame damage, or you have a unibody, and the structural integrity of your vehicle has been damaged, which is kind of like the spine, it's very important to your car. It's as important as the foundation is to your home. Phoenix Body Works uses the finest frame and unibody measuring equipment that the auto body industry has to offer. That's important information when getting your vehicle repaired after an accident. Mark Salem, I have seen so many vehicles come into our shop with bent parts that were obviously not corrected because they want me to align it, but I can't because nothing comes in. So they'll make sure, Phoenix Body Works will make sure your car is put back together the right way, on time, at an affordable price with quality parts. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free and insurance company friendly, and they know how to work with your insurance company. They're not going to be somebody that's a pain in the you know what, but they're going to be an advocate for you to make sure you're treated fairly and you're put back the way you were. So they know how to work with insurance companies. 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley, no matter whether you're in North Phoenix, Anthem, New River, or anywhere else, they're worth the drive. Phoenix Body Works. Dan, you're up, buddy. How can I help you?
I've got a 2000 Dodge Ram pickup that is running hot at highway speed, you know, like 65 or 70.
Okay.
Around town, perfectly normal, but...
I know what it is.
Okay.
All right. I want to ask you a question, though. Hot means where on the gauge? And I want you to go like half, 5/8, 3/4, 7/8, and full.
It normally runs about 210 on the freeway, and it's, you know, halfway between 210 and 260, so, you know, 240 range maybe.
Okay. How many miles are on it?
208,000.
Okay. Radiator's plugged.
Radiator is, well, I guess it doesn't mean it can't be plugged, but the radiator has been replaced within the last 6 months, and so has the water pump.
Okay. It won't be the water pump, but this is what I'm thinking, okay? The fan clutch is a non-issue at 65, 70 miles an hour, because we got so much air blowing across the radiator, we don't need a fan clutch. That's why we kick the fan clutch out, and it just coasts. So what's the difference between slow speed and high speed? Well, the difference is that at slow speed, we need the fan running, and we're moving the water through the radiator real lazy-like, real slow, okay? Now, we're going to stuff 100 people into the train station, but as we stuff 100 people into the train station, they're all going to get in single-file line, and they're going to go through the radiator and come out. They're going to go in and come out about 25 degrees difference, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. However, when you get up to 60, 70 miles an hour, now we have 1,000 people at the train station. And instead of having 1,000 aisles, we only have 2. And so these people are all struggling to get into the aisle. The coolant is struggling to get into the radiator. And when it does, it goes through the radiator so fast, because there's so much pressure behind it, that it only comes out 2 degrees cooler, 3 degrees cooler. And as a result of that, your temperature climbs over 3/4.
Okay.
So it's one of those things that you gave me everything I needed to know. I don't care about the fan clutch. Now, it could also be a thermostat. And if you want to make a quick guess, do a thermostat. Don't get a 180. Get a 195.
Okay.
The other thing is I'm not quite sure that 3/4 on the gauge bothers me, because I put on my website that between half and 3/4 is where you should be. But if you get past that 3/4 mark, I'm with you. You need to have somebody take a look at it. Now, last but not least, if you're going to get a radiator, count the rows inside that radiator you have by looking inside of it, and make sure that whoever puts it on has the same amount of rows. So okay. You don't want to go, you don't want to have somebody undercut everybody else, but they're going to put a 2-row in there when really you have a 3-row.
All right.
Okay?
Oh, one other quick thing.
Sure.
Any recommended transmission shops in Peoria?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got two good guys there. I got Adolph's Transmission in Glendale, and then I have Sun Transmission in Peoria. I want to tell you about Sun. First of all, let me tell you about both of them. Sun Transmission was nominated by the other transmission guys to be on our list. That is impressive. Now, that's only happened once before. Adolph's, years and years ago, when I was taking transmission shops in a geographical area, I called Adolph's about one transmission shop, and he nominated them. So these two guys really are very honorable people. But Sun Transmission is in Peoria, Grand and 83rd Avenue, and you can't go wrong. He's a good guy.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. And Brian, you're up next, buddy.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've been reading your column there in the Republic and your tips for summer-proofing a vehicle, and I agree with them 100%, but out of curiosity, why the plywood under the tires? What's the purpose of that?
Oh, okay. What that does is that it insulates the tires from the extreme hot and cold that the concrete's going to go through. And it's also a little bit more giving than the concrete is. And I want to control the temperature of the tire. Now, it is true that in your garage in the summertime, it's going to be hot.
Right.
The problem is I don't want an oven underneath the tire. So by putting just a wood there, I'm kind of insulating the tire from rubber, or from the heat.
Oh. Okay, because I agree with everything there, and especially about the change in the oil. And everything is really good.
Good. Well, thank you.
Thanks for your answer there.
You're no problem, Brian. Thank you very much for calling.
You know, but reasoning on the tires.
Yeah.
Very much.
All right, you're welcome. And you're not the only one. I should have made that clear in the column. And I've had a couple of ladies call me and ask me the same thing. So everybody was confused, and I apologize. I'll do better. And so will my editors.
Okay, then. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. And let's go to Richard. Richard, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, I've got a 2007 Nissan Xterra. It's manual transmission. Got less than 50,000 miles on it. I'm wondering if there's an aftermarket product that you would recommend to increase the gas mileage on my truck. I average 18, maybe 19 miles per gallon, and I'd try to like to try to eke out a couple more miles per gallon.
I can help you with that. If I were to reach underneath the hood and cut your brake lines, you'd double your fuel economy. Because you'd have to coast, you'd have to anticipate traffic. If you'd use when you said it's a 2007, so I'd probably use like a 020 synthetic or a 530 synthetic, and I'd go 7,000-8,000 miles easy in between oil changes. That'll save you some money. But I'd also air up the tires, not to the sticker. Everybody says, oh, I'm going to use the sticker. You can use the sticker. You can. But why don't we just air them up to the maximum inflation, which makes it easier to roll and less resistance. The tire runs cooler. And if you get sideways on the highway into a yaw, the vehicle won't trip on the tires and roll over. It has a better chance of just skidding across the freeway than tripping and rolling. And when you roll a car, people die. So I can't think of a negative. Here's the negative. If you air up the tires to the maximum inflation, maybe you'll notice a difference in the ride. Maybe. But it's like a bike. You know, you get on your bicycle and you go riding around and you go, oh man, this is taking a lot of effort. You look down and the two tires are half flat. That's the same way with your car. But if you just anticipate traffic or, you know, put a hot cup of coffee on the dashboard and try to drive to work without spilling it, no sudden acceleration, no sudden brakes, or for $29.95, I'll put an automobile horn underneath the driver's seat. I'm going to hook it to the brake pedal, and every time you hit the brake, I'm going to blow that horn you know where, and I promise you, you'll get 10 miles to the gallon better.
I understand.
Because you're not going to hit the brake. Everybody thinks it's related to the throttle, and it's not. You give it hard gas, and everything's a mile apart in Phoenix, and we have two traffic lights in the middle. So you give it gas, and you get going real fast, but then you just turn around, take your foot off the gas, and put it on the brake, and you just take all that and destroy all that momentum. So leave 10 minutes earlier than you normally would, and tell your wife to stop dragon racing your Xterra.
Will do.
All righty, buddy. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Jim, you're up next, buddy.
Jim dropped. We got Vince.
Vince, you're up next.
Hey, sir. This is a little off topic, but I was wondering about the paintless dent repair places.
Uh-huh.
Is that something that would be worthwhile, or is it really just kind of a, it was a big thing once we had that hailstorm, but I haven't really seen him since.
Yeah. Well, what you want to do is you don't want to use the gypsies. There's when we have a hailstorm, then the gypsies move in. You have no warranty. They're going to be gone. They're going to take advantage of your insurance company. The insurance companies hate them. And when you pick the wrong paintless dent repair guy, he's not going to do a really great job because we learned day before yesterday how to do it. I want to tell you that if the paint is not damaged, if there's a ding or a dent in your car and the paint is not damaged, those guys do some of the most fantastic work I've ever seen. They'll come to the shop and they'll set up their fluorescent lamps. And then we've got a dent in the fender, and it's a two-door car, and it's right behind the driver's door. And so they drill a little hole, and they take this long rod, and they stick it in there, and then they start massaging it from the inside. And they have what Mark Salem has never had in his life. They have patience. And they work and massage that thing and touch it and look at it. And within 20, 30, 35, 40 minutes, it's gone. The paint is back to normal. And you go, man, how did you do that? Well, while I'm in this door, I got another one right over here. You want me to do that one too? Yeah. And then when he's done, he puts a little undercoating in the hole. He puts a rubber plug in the hole. And he takes his money and he says goodbye. So, get somebody who's listed at the Better Business Bureau. Get somebody who has an A rating. And here's the best way. Call the high-end car guys. Call the Audis. Call the BMW guys. Call the Benz guys. And say to them, who do you use for dent repair? And then call Chevy and Ford and Toyota and Honda and ask them. You're going to get a common name. And you're going to say to them, will you come to my office? And they say, yeah. And say, okay, I'll meet you when you come. I'll come Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock. Okay, here's my cell phone. I'll meet you out there and give you the keys to my car. Okay, that's how it works. But, yeah, there's a lot of bandits out there. There's a lot of guys that tell you that. Let me ask you a question real quick. Seen any of those cars that go around town that got a bunch of body putty on the outside of them and then they've got 3 or 4 or 10 or 12 spots of paint on them?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the gypsies. They talk people in. They say, hey, I can fix that for you. And they say $300 and it's paint ready. So they take, they don't even sand the paint off. They just take and start putting Bondo on that hole that could be 2-3 inches deep. They just put a big old patch of Bondo, then they level it out, then they get out their sander and they go zzz, and then they paint 3 or 4 dots on it and they say, okay, $300. You have no idea that there's not a paint shop in the world that's going to touch that, because that 300-pound hard rock of Bondo is going to fall out the first time you hit a railroad track hard. So that's not the way we repair cars, but that's what gypsies do. So just find somebody good. What part of town do you live in?
North Central.
Okay. Call Kelly Clark.
Uh-huh.
Call Kurtz Auto Repair and ask them who they use, because Kurtz is at I-17 in Bell and Kelly Clark's at 12th in Glendale, and that's the central corridor maybe you live in.
Yep.
So call them and say, hey, who do you guys use? Now, I'll tell you somebody else you can call that's going to know that area well.
2 minutes.
Jeff Inman at Inman and Sons. I is in Ida, N is in Nora, Man, M-A-N, Inman. Call Jeff Inman and say to him, are you going to guarantee his work too? And Jeff will say yes, because he knows the difference between good and bad body guys.
Okay.
All righty.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have anybody else?
We're all clear.
Okay, we're all clear today. I just want to remind you that in the industry, and I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, our industry isn't healed. And we still have lots of shops that are in financial troubles. And we're all coming up on summer, which is where you make your money. And then come September, October, November, December, we're all pretty slow. And it's true that the snowbirds will come in around Thanksgiving or Christmas, and they'll stay again till May. But there's lots of part of this particular geographical area that snowbirds don't have an effect on. The bottom line is you have to protect yourself. I can't tell you how many people call me and give me a bad, tell me a bad story. And as I'm talking to them, I get to the Better Business Bureau website and I look it up. And this guy has an F rating. And he said, you have to pay for your transmission in advance and in cash. Come on, you guys. Anybody that wants cash up front, they're gone. Anybody that won't take a credit card, they're gone. Anybody who has an F rating at the Better Business Bureau, why would you do business with them? So, this guy could have saved himself $3,800 if he would have made what effectively was 15 minutes worth of work. Call the Better Business Bureau, and then when he calls the shop and he says, cash only, no credit cards, and you got to pay before, bingo, we're done. We're just done. And that's what it's all about. MarkSalem.com is my website. You can visit there. There's lots of information. MarkSalem.com. See you next Saturday.